This is Fresh Air. Writer Floyd Salas comes from a deeply troubled family. His older brother Al was a drug addict and petty criminal. Four of Al's children committed suicide. The other four have either been addicted or spent time in jail. Salas's other older brother Eddie committed suicide, and Salas's own son has had his struggles with addiction. One of the greatest influences on Floyd Salas was his brother Al, who was a mixture of danger and charisma. Al taught him to box, to defend himself in the ring and on the street. Salas spent some time in reform schools when he was a teenager. In fact, he began to write when he was incarcerated to help him cope with his loneliness and his grief. Salas has written several novels, Tattoo the Wicked Cross, What Now My Love, and Lay My Body on the Line. His latest book, Buffalo Nickel, is about his childhood and his relationship with his brother Al. Salas teaches creative writing at Foothills College and is a boxing coach at the University of California in Berkeley. Before we meet Floyd Salas, here he is reading an excerpt from his book, Buffalo Nickel, about an important incident in his childhood.
One night when I was six, I went out into the backyard with Albert to get a pail of coal for the stove. I don't remember why I went with him. Maybe because my mother didn't trust him out alone. Maybe she wasn't home, and he was supposed to stay with me. But when we were out by the coal shed, he suddenly said, "Do you want to go to the upper gym with me?" "Yes," I answered right away, thinking of another spectacular sight. So off we went on his new bicycle. My father bought it new for Al because he had stolen one and gotten in trouble over it. It had cost a lot of money for those Depression days of 1937, $65. You could buy a decent car for that then. He sold all the fancy parts off it, a piece at a time, until it was stripped bare, without fenders even. That disappointed me, too, because it had been so pretty. But off we went across town to the Epworth Gym, which is near Curtis Park, where we used to live, where I had so much fun the day I went for a walk. We got there, and Al took me inside. I remember playing around a while, even though I didn't know anybody. But then it came to be 7 o'clock, and all the little guys had to go home, and the man put me out. I told him my brother was inside and I had to wait for my brother. He got cold and the man kept telling me to go away. I kept saying that I had to wait for my brother. But Al didn't come out. I waited there for 2 hours before he did. I remember how worried I was that he might run off without me. He was nippy too, and I got bored besides. Al finally came out with all the big boys at closing time. The next thing I knew, he said to this other big kid about his age, "My brother can whip yours." I looked up at this tall, skinny kid who'd come out with the big boys. He was at least a head taller than I was. They made a circle around us in the dark, with just a glow of streetlights shining on the residential street. "Fight!" Albert told me. I turned to face the tall kid, who immediately smashed me in the nose. Blood spurted out of it and stars filled my head. He almost knocked me down, and when he hit me a few more times, Albert stopped the fight and tried to wipe the blood off my face. Finally, when the blood stopped, Al said, "Here," and gave me a buffalo head nickel. I took it and thanked him and got on the bike again. I was a little guy even for six, and I fit handily on the handlebar in front of him. He pumped down the dark streets for a long time. I remember how cold it was and that my nose kept dribbling blood. I liked my brother, though. He had finally come outside at closing time, had stopped the fight, and had given me a nickel. But when we were almost home, he told me not to tell my mother that we had gone to the Edward Gym or that I had been in a fight. "Okay," I said. "Good," he said. Then he asked me, "Floyd, could you give me that nickel back? I need it." "Sure." I handed it over to him. He did that a lot to me also before it was over.
That's Floyd Salas reading from his latest book called Buffalo Nickel. That seemed to really describe your relationship with Al. It's the sort of dance between being disappointed by him and then him coming through for you.
You mean right there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, at times he came through for me. Like, I went blind after my mother died, and I was playing baseball with all of them. It's in the book here, and the ball came out to me in center field, and it came towards me. It ran right through my legs because I had lost all sense of spatial judgment. And he laughed at me, and he teased me. And so I felt a little bit bad because I'd missed it, because I could catch that well. I'd even played on the fourth grade team. And then a couple of weeks later, a box came to my house. This is all in the book. And in the box were 9 almost brand new baseball gloves. And I started a team with those gloves, and it gave me something to do for 2 summers as a boy. It was an important gift. So that's what I mean, okay? Sometimes, that's when he's in the Army. After he came back to Oakland. There was a period when we moved to Oakland in which he entirely changed, and everything turned out to be really nice. He was with the family. Everything was going well. And so it was during that time that the good characteristics that he had were developed, and that's one of them. You see? He still had them then. After he got out of the Army, after her death sunk into him, he became destroyed. When the mother died, she was the heart of this family. It was a close-knit family. She was a Leo. She was a woman. Everybody loved her. She was much, much beloved. She was an entertainer. She always had people there. When she was gone, everything seemed to go. And then everybody suffered deaths over it. My album, Eddie committed suicide 7 years later in June, the month that she died. I became a dope fiend after Eddie committed suicide.
Having read about your family and the problems with addictions, the problems with suicide, with early deaths, do you feel like a survivor in your own family?
Well, yes, I definitely do feel like a survivor, but I don't feel I've quite survived yet because I still fight the thought of suicide constantly. I fight it constantly because what it is, it promises peace. You see, the endless, almost nonsensical, meaningless, attempt to make some meaning out of your future death. You see, your non-existence. And so that hangs over me all the time because I don't want that to happen. But in the meantime, it is a way out, you see. So it's not quite over. So I'm a survivor, definitely a survivor. I feel like a survivor, and it's not over yet. Get the idea?
I get the idea, but why, as you say, suicide has a kind of attraction for you? Why have you not committed suicide? Like many people in your family have.
Yeah. Well, often, to be honest, okay, I don't want it to end, okay, first of all, because this is all there is, all right? And then the things I have to do, there are stories I have to tell. There's other people, this is the thing that finally stops me in the end. There are other people who are dependent upon me emotionally, like my son, you see. I'm afraid, he had a big alcohol problem. He's gone 2 years now without drinking, and that's all. June 16th, Bloom's Day, is the day that he chose to do this, okay? And at that time, it was Father's Day, so in a sense, he did it for me. And so I have to make sure that he makes it. So if I kill myself, then I kill him too. So it's an act of extreme selfishness if I kill myself. You see what I'm trying to say?
We're going to take a short break, and my guest today on Fresh Air is Floyd Salas, and he's written a number of books. His latest one is called Buffalo Nickel, and it's about his childhood, about his relationship with his older brother Al, who was a boxer, had some problems with addiction and criminal activity as well. Floyd Salas is president of the Oakland chapter of Penn. He teaches creative writing, and he's also a boxing coach at the University of California. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest on Fresh Air is Floyd Salas. We're talking about his book, Buffalo Nickel, which is about his troubled relationship with his brother, Al. Al taught you to fight, taught you how to box. Were you good at it? Did you get good at it?
Well, I went to University of California Boxing Scholarship, right? That was the first boxing scholarship ever given by the University of California. That year, they gave actually 2 of them, and he gave them to both guys were the same weight, 126. We were both featherweights. But we were the 2 outstanding boxers, so he gave them to us. And so then we were supposed to fight it out. But I really was a bantamweight. When I got in shape, I went down 7 pounds. I took the thing. But we still used to fight all the time, okay? Al said this when I started training as an amateur. He had a cousin, a guy who'd married my cousin, whom he used to train with when they were kids, and he said to him at a party once, he said, "You think we were good? We're not good. This kid fights like a pro now." Okay? In terms of pure talent, I just like I can dance, I can box. It's like a Sugar Ray Leonard kind of style. Say, I can move like that, okay? That's a natural thing. It comes from being small-shouldered, so I'm built wiry. That means that I'm really quick and fast. You see, that's why I can dance well. It's the same, so it's a physical thing. Then, of course, with that comes a quick mind, and I still have very fast reflexes, very quick reflexes. So I'm more quick than anyone else. So that allows me to dance away and not get hit. So I don't get hit very much. That makes me a good boxer, see? And then I can come in and I can close. So actually, in a sense, I'm a very good boxer, but I never had a killer instinct. Al had to get me to go hit, try to hit the guy. He says, like in the book, he says, that guy's making fun of you. In order to get me mad enough to go try to hurt the guy, because I never tried to hurt him. I always thought of it as a physical thing, like dancing, in which you enjoyed yourself, boxing. I never thought, really and truly, I never thought you were supposed to go out there and try to really destroy the other guy.
You describe the kind of performance, I guess, you have to do inside the ring, and you say it was like walking into the Roman Colosseum. Did you like the crowd and the crowd edging on a fight, edging on you to fight?
Well, the crowd, first of all, is the most frightening thing I ever saw in my life.
Really?
Okay? I mean, I've read the 2,000 people in the poetry reading, and that's frightening too, okay? But this is even more frightening, because you're not only have everybody watching, but you're going to make, you can make yourself a terrible fool of yourself in front of all of them quickly. So it's a great fear. But then, after the first punches are thrown, all fear is gone. There's no more fear. And then it's a form of joy. And I try to beat him up. I'll finally learn how to do that. I'll try to beat him up, see? I'll go out there. I'll go get him, see? It's a fight. I enjoy the fight. And then I hear the crowd, and things are good. But the crowd is secondary. I mean, it's even third area, if I can say it like that. The manager is secondary. And so the fight is all that counts. And the crowd is unimportant after that, really and truly, and until the fight is over. And then you love the crowd again. And this time, you also love the other fighter, because you've just endured. You've just gone through a moment of truth, both of you. And maybe you're both still standing on your feet. And you love him because he's had your similar experience. He's dared to do what you've dared to do.
Now, you're 61 years old.
Right.
Do you still box?
Oh, yeah. Listen. That's what? My stomach.
Okay? Is that your stomach? Okay? I didn't know what that was.
Yeah, that's my stomach, pounding my stomach. Okay?
But
what
does that tell us?
It tells you that I'm in tip-top shape. I have the physical body of a young man, of a young athletic man in his mid-20s, like the Cal boxers. 2 months ago, I stopped a light heavyweight Cal boxer. He'd been a middleweight before he left, okay? But we had last boxed 5 years before I'd hurt my elbow on him. We saw each other again. I said, let's fight again. So we fought again. And I had to fight right. I had to switch and leave with my right hand because I had hurt my left elbow on him 5 years before. And so then I was doing really well. I was going to give him a nice left cross to his body. And I leaned to give him a left cross to the body. Wham! He caught me with a left cross. His left cross coming in. That's 175 pounds as opposed to 125 pounds. And boy, oh boy, I felt like someone hit me in the chest with a sledgehammer, okay? So then I had to switch back to right hand and leave with my left and fight left-handed anyway, whether I liked it or not. And I made him quit in the next round.
It's interesting to hear you talk about this because in certain ways it sounds like the kinds of words that come out of a younger person. I mean, even a teenage kid on the street that wants to prove himself to the other guys around. Is that still true?
Oh, listen, that's the essence of manhood.
Well, that's what I
wanted
to get
to. All men, even big, fat businessmen in business offices have exactly that attitude. The male is a killer, a biological killer, okay? And when they talk about these male groups and things like that, that blows me away. Man, that gray-haired guy with a puffy belly, what's his name now?
Robert Bly.
Who?
Robert Bly.
Who leads these male things. I look at him, man. The biological essence of a male is to go out and kill and feed people. That's essentially it. If you don't have that killer in you, and by the way, he's got a killer in him, because I've been around him a few times, all right? He's got a killer in him. That's why he's competitive. He's very competitive. So I'll give him credit for that, okay? But physically, mm-hmm. He would die in the jungle.
How does writing and fighting or boxing complement each other?
Oh, boy, I love that, okay? Yes, I call myself a fighter-writer. And Ishmael Reed called his new book, Writing is Fighting. Well, he stole that from me. I want everybody to know that, okay?
Okay.
He's my buddy. Okay, no, here's how they complement each other. I teach writing the same way as I teach fighting.
How's that?
And that's this. Yeah, in fighting, the Japanese samurai, okay, of the Middle Ages, had a belief that the greatest warrior was the purest warrior, with the greatest character, and the knights of the Middle Ages had the same belief. The knight who could pull the stone out of the sword out of the stone was the one with the greatest character. You see, so I teach my fighters that the one who has the greatest character, the one who gives himself the most for it, the one who really cares for it and devotes himself like a monk to it, is the one who will win this fight who will gain victory. And the same thing applies for writing. It's the one who commits themselves. You know, I don't care what the level of talent is. I don't care what the level of mentality is. The one who commits themselves and genuinely gives themselves to it, that person will succeed no matter what it is. So they both have the same character elements are necessary in order to achieve success in either of them.
Floyd Salas is president of the Oakland chapter of Penn. His latest book is a memoir called Buffalo Nickel.